The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Florence Nash from Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from AARP Magazine for February and March. Today's programming is generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. Now, last week we were reading an interesting article on the future of virtual medicine, that is, telemedicine, taking care of patients from many miles away. But it's a long and complicated article. We didn't get to the end of it, so I'd like to just get back on it today. The next section of this article is called, Are We in the Way? Gavin Helton, M.D., the gentle, caring medical director of Mercy Virtual and the Center's Engagement at Home program, told me he loved the primary practice he had built up over 17 years. So it was a bit surprising to find him a video monitor away from those patients now. He explained that he did indeed need to be cajoled into his current position by Mercy Virtual and accepted it only with assurances that he could return to his practice if he missed the joys and intimacies of direct patient care. To smooth the transition for himself as well as his patients, Helton at first made routine trips to the homes of new participants in the virtual program to help them get set up and to understand the feel of engagement at home on their side of it. 2 years into the program, he tells me he is finding virtual care as fulfilling as his previous practice. Plus, he has the means to teach many more people and make a much greater contribution this way. I feel like half the state of Missouri has my cell phone, he jokes. With nothing but rosy reports from both sides of the virtual encounters, I thought there might be yet great gripes among doctors who felt that they were being crowded out by a virtual overseer. If anyone was going to tell me why the practice had drawbacks, it would be William Galley, M.D., or Nurse Miranda Pickens. When I visited the ICU at Mercy Hospital, Washington, Galley was the presiding intensive care specialist, and Pickens was one of the staff nurses. Surely, I thought, one of them would have misgivings about all that surveillance. Not so. Galley, as open and friendly with me as he was methodically efficient when it came time to run ICU rounds, had only praise for the virtual care program. He told me his autonomy was in no way compromised, yet he could sleep better at night knowing that a virtual care team, including a certified intensive care specialist, was monitoring the patients continuously. Pickens agreed and noted how much the nurses appreciated nearly instantaneous access to an expert physician whenever needed. We resuscitated a patient at night with the tele-ICU physician in charge via video, and the patient had a phenomenal recovery, she said, pressing a button and getting the doctor in less than a minute. It's that quick. The diagnosis. Whether other hospital systems can or want to replicate Mercy's specific model is still to be determined. And more data need to be collected and analyzed in areas such as patient usage patterns and the barriers of entry for healthcare providers. But Mercy has already showed that, as a business model, virtual care can be a winner, that it can reduce healthcare costs, improve efficiency, and lead to improved patient outcomes. Overall, I was impressed. From what I witnessed, virtual care was convincingly enhancing the timeliness and quality of healthcare delivery to patients without sacrificing the human touch. I was skeptical when I started this assignment. After my days of visiting and weeks of studying, I emerged not only enthusiastic but excited about virtual care's capabilities. Plus, it got me to ponder. What's next? While Mercy operates a vast health network, including many rural facilities, I can envision even greater benefits to applying this virtual care approach in urban settings, where hospitals are often under greater financial and clinical pressures because of their larger patient populations. Over time, the Mercy system also offers the promise of creating social groups among patients, so no one is left to face a medical challenge alone. Even more promising, though, is the possibility that Mercy will help speed the needed transformation of a disease care system into a system of actual health care, in which doctors focus as much on prevention and healthy living as they do on cures and treatments. How? By detecting problems early in hospitalized and ambulatory patients alike. Mercy Virtual is reducing hospital admissions, emergency department visits, and extended hospital stays, saving millions of dollars. Mercy plans to invest a portion of that savings into a portfolio of health promotion and disease prevention programming. That was music to this preventive medicine specialist's ears. I am tempted to tell you to get in line when virtual care comes to a hospital or clinic near you. But there's really no need. They'll come to you. It's what they do. Now, I'll tack on a little sidebar to that, this article. And this is virtual care from the patient's perspective. Virtual health care can seem intimidating after a lifetime of in-office visits, but think of it as an additional tool to use to get the best care possible, says Matthew Fayman, MD, who is affiliated with the Cleveland Clinic. It isn't meant to replace face-to-face care. These are five benefits of virtual care for patients, according to healthcare professionals. 1. Convenience. You waste more time than you think on routine doctor visits, whether it's sitting in stop-and-go traffic or in a waiting room. Virtual visits reduce travel time, says George Goh, MD, of Kaiser Permanente Northwest. 2. Managing chronic conditions. Several hospital systems use virtual care technologies to monitor ongoing health conditions such as diabetes, high blood pressure, and COPD as frequently as daily, so they can act immediately if anything goes awry. 3. Treating urgent symptoms. The last thing you want when a fever or cough hits is to drag yourself out of bed or to sit in a waiting room filled with other sick people. Virtual care lets you have an initial appointment right from your bed. 4. More efficient health care. One potential benefit of telehealth care is having primary doctors and specialists participating together in a virtual visit, reducing the number of appointments you need and, in many cases, the costs you pay. And finally, 5. First-class care anywhere. If you live far from a city or are in another country, telehealth is helping to expand access to both doctors and services. Retirees tend to travel a lot, Goh observes. Virtual visits make it much easier to coordinate care. Now for something completely different. Here's an article. Roseanne and John, the show goes on. 20 years may have passed, but one of America's most beloved TV couples returns to the small screen, wiser, happier, and funnier than ever. The heading is Reunited and It Feels So Good. The scene opens on a hangar-like photo studio in the heart of Hollywood. John Goodman walks in alone, over an hour early and a little cranky from a fender bender he had on the way to the interview. Soon enough, Roseanne Barr arrives, sporting blonde highlights and looking glamorous in sunglasses. It's a few days before Thanksgiving, and Barr finishes a quick smoke outside while she chats about past family feasts. And now she's making jokes at our expense. I really appreciate the fact that AARP didn't ask me to do their nude centerfold this issue, Barr 65, deadpans. Her trademark smirk and nasal delivery are still in excellent form. Some things are better left not even to the imagination. Goodman, the man who played Barr's husband Dan on what was once America's top-rated sitcom, remains oddly stone-faced. It's part of a game. On set and off, these two legendary friends try to get each other to wet ourselves, as Goodman 65 puts it later. It's why Barr won't quit with a getting older shtick. You know, it's kind of funny calling a 68-year-old guy my boyfriend, she says of Johnny Argent, her partner of 15 years. They live on a 46-acre macadamia farm on the Big Island of Hawaii, near 4 of Barr's 5 children and 5 of her 6 grandkids. Johnny and I don't fight or argue much anymore. We learned that we need that energy for things like climbing stairs, chewing, and getting off the toilet. With that, Goodman's eyes squinch up and his shoulders start to bounce. Roseanne comes back to ABC on March 27 with the original cast. Though it's been 20 years since the show's last primetime run, it seems more like a weekend hiatus for these two. That's how well they gel. It's like being home again, Barr says. Yeah, says Goodman, ever droll, and I think we know what's really important now. Lunch. Cue the harmonica and sax. Those fun-loving, straight-talking, blue-collar Connors are back, and just when we need them most. In an age when sitcom grown-ups look more and more like college kids, the return of good old Roseanne and Dan is a beautiful reminder that the funny bone doesn't go numb at 50. The TV couple who once spoke for working-class America now reflect the changing face of middle age. Though that famous couch with the granny square afghan is a replica, the original is in the Smithsonian. Today's Connors have a gender-creative grandkid and are making sense of selfies, medical marijuana, rising health care costs, and the growing divide between the super-rich and the rest of us. Goodman and Barr are adjusting to the moment, too, between photo setups and video interviews for AARP, the magazine. They slip away for remarkably candid chats, and clearly, it's a fascinating juncture for both of them. Barr. After the Roseanne show, I just kind of decided I was going to do whatever I wanted and not do anything for money, which I didn't need. And so I had a lot of great adventures. I ran for president, traveled a lot, lots of clearing land, planting stuff, playing music, getting crafty. I bought an old museum in Hawaii and kind of rebuilt it by hand. I turned it into an art project, and it took about 6 years to transform this big dump into a really awesome place. I made big murals out of rocks and glass, and I did it all with family. I'm a real fun grandma, too. I swear and stuff. Everything their parents don't want me to do, I like to do. We get in the pool and have squirt gun fights, shooting each other in the eyeball. They crack up. My grandkids know how to grow their own food, too, and that's what I wanted them to know more than anything, how not to be dependent. Of course, they mostly want to hear about the other famous people I know, like if I've met The Rock. I thought I made all the statements I wanted to make as a comic. But of course, now as a grandparent, I realize there's way more to say, like watching how your kids raise their kids. That's a big part of the reboot, and it's a big part of my life, too. This whole younger generation is just, I don't know what in the hell they're doing. They're just so dependent on technology, and it's all different. They talk a whole different language, you know? Goodman. I was in pretty bad shape when I left Roseanne, to be honest. I had a lot of resentment. I just didn't care. It was a terrible character fault of mine. I always wanted more of something. There was an emptiness inside me. I still have it, but I know what it is now. You recognize it and go, there it is. You don't have to fill it with another pork chop or another drink. For me, it was probably just a fear of not being good enough, not being worthy of what I was getting. Maybe survivor's guilt from having grown up poor. But then after 10 years and the fact that I was sober, I started looking back fondly and realized how lucky I had been. And I really feel that now. I have a daughter that I worried about for a while. Goodman and his wife of 28 years, Anna Beth, have one child, Molly, 27. She grew up with an alcoholic father until she was in high school. But things are great now. They're probably a lot better than I thought they would turn out. When you're younger, you don't know yourself that well. I've maybe not learned a lot, but I've learned to appreciate things that I should have before. It's like with my character, Dan. He's just got some age and experience on him. I wouldn't say he's woke, because that sounds so new age. Dan's just more aware and more accepting of things and kind of celebrates different types of people. That's like me now. I wish I could find something that fascinates me as much as acting. I'd like to learn to draw, maybe pick up a guitar like I used to. I'd still like to learn French, German, and piano. I used to play harmonica and sing a little bit, but after I got sober, I realized that I actually have no talent. Better, stronger, faster. The scene dissolves to Goodman on a break, getting his sore back pounded in an old-fashioned Jack LaLanne-era sort of way by his groomer. I've got bionic parts now, Goodman says between thwacks. He's talking about his set of titanium knees. You live through enough and survive. You have to make peace with your flaws and your broken pieces. Goodman doesn't see the point in bragging about his significant weight loss. It was basically just portion control, and I don't need it, he says. I was just shoving everything into my mouth. But I don't want to be an example to anybody when the weight comes thundering back on, when I start eating Crisco out of the can with a spoon and a side of confectioner's sugar. Bar is nearby, all dolled up and glittering in sequins. I'm leaving my body to science fiction, she says. Someone asked Barr about the picture that surfaced from her 65th birthday last fall. It shows two shirtless hunks presenting her with cakes and serenading her as she sits on a gold throne. There's a crown on her head and a scepter in her hand. I deserve it, right? She says. And after all, she did invent the title domestic goddess. You can still be kind of hot at 65 in your own mind. Goodman saunters over, looking dashing in a charcoal overcoat and black sweater. A photographer begins clicking away. Any sign of soreness vanishes as the venerable co-stars ham it up for the shot. As if to demonstrate the versatility of those $6 million man components, Goodman lowers himself to the floor and drapes an arm around Barr's ankles. Barr, who broke her kneecap in three places from a fall in 2016, is happy to stand in place. There's an upside to the creaks and pains of age, she says. It forced me to slow down, which is good. If you fight your body as it ages, you're not going to win. 5. Just like us? Barr. As you get older, you're not only more grateful, but you're more in the moment. Things are more meaningful. You don't want to just get through it. I was always racing to get to the punchline. Now it's just like, well, I'm leaving it in there. Goodman. Yeah, it's nice having been around a while. I can just speak for myself instead of throwing these little roadblocks in my way and crap. Barr. And I've carved a lot of the chaos out of my life. Now it's more relaxed. Goodman. Although it's harder because I'm older. Daddy gets tired. Daddy gets a headache and can't remember his lines sometimes. Barr. Right. We definitely have to practice more. Memory is a muscle. Goodman, one other thing is, I thought for some reason I was an expert on humor when I was younger. Barr, me too. Goodman, I don't have to work so hard to be funny now. Barr, maybe we did all the hard work in the past, and now we are enjoying it, like a lot of retired people are. 6. Laughs last. The shoot is nearly wrapped, and Barr and Goodman are ending with more energy than they came in with. All the conversations about then versus now and the passage of time have them feeling thankful and inspired about where life has taken them. It's hard to fathom today that Barr had never acted before getting her name on a primetime comedy all those years ago. That doesn't happen anymore. Goodman wasn't much more experienced. The most iconic part he played before joining Roseanne might have been the "Thanks, I needed that" guy in the old Men in Skin Bracer ads. But Roseanne hit a nerve, and no matter what happens with the relaunch, the sitcom will endure as a classic in the realm of All in the Family and Married with Children. Not that Goodman is buying the hype. Barr is letting loose again with one-liners, but her longtime TV husband slaps the poker face back on. I decided to take a break from not working so I could spend less time with my family, Barr jokes. Goodman, still nothing. Yeah, Barr continues, we're tackling tough issues on the show that confront people every day, starting with what I call the hatriotism. We need to stop letting ourselves be herded into these two hostile camps. We have to come together and place the blame where it really belongs, on people who exercise. The slightest curve of a smile comes to Goodman's face. Barr knows she's got him. Hey, man. At this age, I try to focus on things I love, like humor, naps, not dying. Wherever you're reading this, you can probably hear Daddy's laughter from there. Every day, I pinch myself and wonder, is this the most fun in the world, or the onset of dementia? Barr says, and Goodman is giggling in agreement. Either way, I'm loving it. Now let's take a look at another beloved actor, this time Helen Mirren, who was a 2017 Career Achievement Award winner as cinema's reigning queen. We Americans first fell in love with Helen Mirren as Detective Chief Inspector Jane Tennyson in the British TV series Prime Suspect. when it came to the U.S. in the early 1990s. She was steely, navigating blatant sexism in a workplace that today would have gotten that whole lot fired. We yearned for much more of her after she wowed us with her Oscar-nominated performance in the 1994 film The Madness of King George, and we soon got more with her starring roles in The Roman Spring of Mrs. Stone, Calendar Girls, and the 2006 biopic The Queen, for which she won an Oscar in 2007. She captivated us with her range from bawdy, saucy, and funny to stern and imposing. And it's true she is best known for her queens, in addition to playing Queen Elizabeth II twice in The Queen and The Audience. Mirren, 72, has portrayed Queen Charlotte in The Madness of King George, Elizabeth I in a TV miniseries, a Snow Queen, voice only in an animated film, and Lord knows how many more monarchs on stage during her Royal Shakespeare Company days. Indeed, Mirren, an official dame, as in Dame Commander of the Order of the British Empire, is regal even when she is playing a commoner. Think of her haughty confidence as the owner of a Michelin-starred restaurant in The 100-Foot Journey, or her proud carriage as an elderly Jewish woman trying to reclaim a family portrait stolen by Hitler in Woman in Gold. She's even the most elegant assassin ever in both Red films. But she is cheeky. Remember that 2016 Super Bowl ad for Budweiser in which she admonishes a viewing audience of zillions that, if you drive drunk, you simply put are a short-sighted, utterly useless, oxygen-wasting human form of pollution. Or her entrance on Stephen Colbert's late-night talk show when she stunned the normally unflappable CBS host by planting a full kiss on his lips. On top of that, she has always been simply beautiful. Michael Powell cast her in the 1969 film Age of Consent because, he says, he found her luscious, intelligent, and hot. L'Oreal made her the face of a beauty campaign and brand ambassador when she was 69. In the end, it's her work that has vaulted her to fame and has been most important to her. As she told AARP not long ago about the beginning of her career, I didn't want to be famous, but I wanted to be a really good actress. She didn't get the first part of that wish, but she sure as heck got the second. Now, here's a quick look at another British actor that we have come to love here in the States. This is a little upfront chat with Alan Cumming. Cheers to you, Alan Cumming. The actor, singer, and author hosts Movies for Grown-Ups Awards with AARP The Magazine on PBS on February 23. Well, that's behind us. Starting March 11, he stars in the new CBS series Instinct as a professor on the hunt for a serial killer. His character is sort of a kooky academic, the actor says. 1. Golden Age. When I turned 50 a few years ago, I felt really excited, very energized, kind of inspired by it. I feel really connected to young people, and I feel like I have some wisdom and can be a mentor. 2. Soup's on. I'm a vegan and a big fan of soup, especially a curry soup. If it's water and got vegetables in it, I'm in. Filming Instinct, the showrunner calls me soup because I have soup at least 2 times a day. 3. Tartan Pride. Scotland is my native country, and it's a very soulful place. Being open and welcoming and standing up against injustice, those are Scottish traits. Here's somebody, here's another star who's been in the media on screen lately. This is some comments from Scott Hamilton, the Olympic skating champ and sportscaster, talking about cancer, hope, and how to survive success. This is upfront, what I know now. Here comes the sun. I start my day by looking at the way the sun illuminates my scars, because they are most vivid in natural light. To me, they're badges of honor. The biggest cut is the one that goes all the way down my abdomen from the testicular cancer surgery I had in 1997. It represents healing, not illness. Growing up fearless. I was a small, sickly kid. I was misdiagnosed with cystic fibrosis at one point and given 6 months to live. Yes, it's traumatic, but after that, what's to be scared of? No destiny. I wasn't a prodigy. For many years, my ambition in competitions was just to not come in last. Nobody, least of all me, ever believed I was on any kind of superstar trajectory. But all that disappointment gave me a sense of destination. Not destiny, not something larger than life, but of destination, which was concrete and practical and day by day. Trophies be gone. I gave most of my medals away. My Olympic gold from 84 sat in the back of an underwear drawer for 8 years. I had this terrible recurring vision of spending the rest of my life waving from my parade float. Success can sometimes be just as paralyzing as failure. I looked at that gold medal as sort of an idol. Tumor take three. The first time I heard brain tumor in 2004, there was shock and fear. Even though it wasn't malignant, it was still something that could kill me if it wasn't removed. The second time in 2010, when they told me the tumor had grown back, I felt kicked in the stomach. But the third time, last year, I thought, get strong. The tumor isn't growing, so the best course of action is to keep an eye on it while not giving it anything it wants. So I'm drinking lots of high pH water. I've eliminated sugar from my diet. I get good sleep and I exercise as much as possible. Pray tell. Praying is a very simple and very complex thing in my life, and it reminds me that life is precious and to be lived joyfully. This hasn't always been the case. It began when the woman who later became my wife just straight up asked, "Where are you in your relationship with Jesus Christ?" And I said what any smart guy in that situation would say, which was, "Where do you want me to be? My doppelganger. Do I get mistaken for Mark Hamill? All the time. Everywhere. It's, hi, Mark, and use the force." The weirdest thing is that many of these people know I'm a skater, not a Jedi, and they still call me Mark. Scott Hamilton, who is now 59, covered the 2018 Winter Olympics in South Korea for NBC, and he also heads his cancer foundation, CARES, C-A-R-E-S. Now, we're about out of time, but maybe time for one quick little book review. Here's a recommendation. Chicago, a new book by David Mamet. Mamet revisits the Chicago gangster life he immortalized in The Untouchables in this Prohibition-era novel about World War I vet Mike Hodge, a reporter in a city teeming with secrets and corruption who's hot on the story of a lifetime, the killing of his girlfriend. Then we have Kerouac on Record, a literary soundtrack, edited by Simon Warner and Jim Sampas. This essay collection documents how on-the-road beat author Jack Kerouac fused the sounds of bebop with his writing and influenced a generation of younger musicians, including Tom Waits, Patti Smith, and Bob Dylan, a bit academic yet worth it for students of our culture. And now we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. I hope you'll come back and listen next time and that you've enjoyed today. I'm Florence Nash, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and our program is underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org.